Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
He kōna e purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi, and welcome to Eating Fried Chicken, the show bonus episode. Joining me is Saab Jahal, clinical psychologist.
Kia ora, James.
Kia ora, Saab. So I want to talk to you about being institutionalized because I think it's something that we still hear. And for me, I get a scene from a film, and I think a lot of people do. That's our understanding of being institutionalized. You know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or Girl Interrupted, if you're a little bit younger. But what actually happens someone's being institutionalized?
I get exactly the same sort of pictures when I hear that language. And I think it is language that, for many people who are perhaps a little bit older, still echoes with truth. But mm-hmm. for a lot of people, they kind of wonder what that means. And I think it echoes back to a time when, if you were seriously mentally ill, then you would perhaps be looked after in an institution, which would be kind of like a bricks and mortar, kind of like old style hospital, where the responsibility of the medical care would be not just to treat you, but to offer you shelter and protection as well. So it's a whole sort of wraparound care. But the idea of institutionalization is that actually it can be quite disabling and disempowering, and could end up being almost like a lifelong treatment for people because they don't have any other life skills to negotiate being out in the world again afterwards.
And again, I think we see films about these kind of things. And first of all, the buildings look terrifying, and if it's not a film based there in historically, it's normally a film based there when it's closed and there's now ghosts and things living in the building. Do you think that adds to a stigma around being institutionalized?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that carrying that with you, it kind of carries a label perhaps where you see yourself as being very different from the rest of society. You can be perceived of by other people if you say that you've been in an institution or you were institutionalized as perhaps being very different from their experience of what life is like. And it carries all that stuff around, you know, perhaps being locked up for the protection of other people as well as of yourself from society, and perhaps harming yourself as well.
Do you think, with societal ideas of harden up, or you got to be tough, push on through, do we associate words like failure, do you think, with being institutionalized? Like if you end up in there, there's this idea that, oh, you haven't been able to handle society.
Yeah. And I think it's tied up with an old-fashioned term again of this idea of mental breakdown.
Yeah.
Which kind of almost predates World War One and World War Two in terms of that's how limited our thinking was in terms of people going through mental health difficulties or having mental health problems, is that we assumed that there was some kind of mental breakdown or nervous breakdown, which meant that they weren't able to function in everyday life. And often it could come on quite suddenly and it would end up in this only option that they had available at that time. You know, this idea or the word of asylum was supposed to be protection and shelter so that people could recover. But unfortunately, they ended up becoming essentially bins where they could put people who they didn't know how to deal with. But that changed a little bit. You know, as we went through World War One and World War Two, and we had returning soldiers from combat who were dealing with all the difficulties and what they'd seen and experienced through going through war, is actually the language then started to change towards psychological distress.
Right.
And so we started to get a lot more nuanced around how we thought about what we called up until that point mental breakdowns.
Because, again, when we think of mental breakdowns, I think we still think of movie scenes. Or TV. I mean, we talk about asylums. Arguably the most famous asylum in current pop culture is Arkham Asylum. We think Batman, we think the Joker films. There's still those ideas of very dramatic, very big, very loud breakdowns. But is that actually what's happening when a mental breakdown occurs?
Well, I think that one of the things that we've learned is that language is really, really important. Mm. So rather than just kind of naming the place or naming the general experience, we can now get very specific around, you know, well, what is the actual symptom that people are experiencing? Is it things like sleeping difficulties, like insomnia? Is it loss of energy? Is it suicidal thoughts? You know, all these different things then help us to figure out what is the best way to help people, mm. rather than just this big catch-all where essentially we just partition them from the rest of society because they were just seen as too difficult.
And what are the ways in which we can ourselves, who are not involved in this, look to address the way in which we view asylums and breakdowns?
Well, I think one of the things that we can do is to see that actually we're all on a continuum, right? And our symptoms, our experience of life differs on a day-to-day basis. Some days we can feel like it's a real struggle, mm-hmm. and other days we can feel like we're on top of things. At least, you know, as modern life is, it changes from moment to moment, changes from day to day. And it's when the balance changes. So we're having, you know, considerably more bad days than we are having good days. And we feel like it's getting in the way of actually living our lives. It feels like we can't work, or it feels like we can't fulfill our parenting responsibilities. These then become danger signs that perhaps we need to have help. Mm. And the help that is offered now, and the help that is available, is far more targeted towards these specific difficulties now rather than this kind of catch-all mental breakdown. So I think one of the things that we also understand is that it's not just the mental side of life, it's the whole experience of living, and that includes your physical life as well.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because that's another aspect I wanted to talk about. Was I remember when I was in my late teens, I took up ninjutsu. Because there was a dojo near my house in Lower Hutt. I was the ninja of the hut. And that was actually really helpful for me because, well, to be honest, I'm not really sure why. And I was wondering if maybe you could help me understand that. And that it was something really nice about, you know, the rhythm of going to classes, the discipline of following instructions, but also just the primal thing of punching air and going kya, and, you know, forcefully expelling, it felt like, the emotions I had pent up. Is that part of why sometimes, you know, we look at things like martial arts as being able to help?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting what you say in terms of the experience of being in your body, mm. right? So you talked about the structure, somewhere where you could go regularly, and martial arts certainly offers a lot of structure in terms of how it is that you do things, repetitive movements, the expellation, the exaltation, you know, the release of energy and the management of energy, right? Mm. So often martial arts is used as a way perhaps of helping boys, and it tends to be young boys, not exclusively so, that perhaps have a lot of aggressive or angry feelings, mm. and a way of being able to make sense of those and use them more productively. And it's interesting because it seems to have a paradoxical effect in that you would expect perhaps more aggression, but actually the way that people are experiencing the structure and the routine and the meaning of their bodily movements means that they can inhabit and experience those emotions in their bodies in a way that's structured and helps them to gain more control rather than it being something that feels like it's taking over their bodies. So I think it's a really interesting way that is beneficial for a lot of people because it does offer that structure and it does offer that relationship with the body and emotions that is quite different when it happens in an unregulated way.
I think control is a really interesting word you used there because I know other people I've spoken to with similar experiences have gone through something like dance. And I know people who've gone to the gym, but they've, like, I'm talking about people who've got a personal trainer and really learn because they want to control what their body can do. Is there a mental health benefit to having more control over your body?
I think it's partly the control of your body, but partly learning to inhabit and also experience the sensations of your body. Mm. Right? There's this part of our brain which is called the default default mode network, which is this kind of like your sense of me all the time. And that's working all the time. And if we're not careful, it can get us into trouble. It can be the stuff that keeps you awake at night with the worries of the thing that you may have to do later on, or what do people think about me if you're really kind of that way inclined of looking at the world and how you perceive violence.
Absolutely that way inclined.
Yeah. But what being in your body then does is that it enables you to experience all the stuff that's not only going on in your body, but as you start to master it and use your body in different ways. So for me, it was running.
Okay? Right.
So once I got past the kind of like the initial learning to run and feeling puffed and all the rest of it, you get to the point where you're actually sort of like gliding across the ground, and you're feeling the sensation, you're seeing the sights, you're hearing the wind, and you're feeling the sun beating on your skin. And all of that stuff means that you're not thinking about all the stuff that's troubling you. So being in your body, I think it's not just about the control of like what your arms and legs are doing, but it's all the benefits that you get from being the sensing animals and beings that we actually are,
right.
Not just caught up in our heads the whole time, but learning that actually we are heads that live in our bodies.
And for our listeners who might not be able to experience all the things that we're talking about with their bodies, it's really about focusing on being in their body.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than what you do with the body.
Absolutely. It's the sensations that your body can unlock for you. And if you have limited means of that, and often we find that people tell us that because they have limited ways of sensing in some parts of their body, actually they have acute ways of sensing that other people who are differently abled aren't able to experience. So everybody's journey will be different in their own bodies that they have at that period of time. And it's an interesting issue around aging as well, right? Mm. As our bodies change as we get older, the experience of being in that body changes too. And that also has an impact upon our sense of self and mental well-being as well, which has to change as we get older.
Which is often where that little gallows humor of getting older comes in, you know. So for anyone who's, once you've passed 30 and you start making noises as soon as you sit up, you know, getting off the chair becomes a small composition and grunts and noises.
I dread to think the noises that I'm making now then when I try and get up.
Oh, we all do, mate. We all do. It's part of the journey. Clinical psychologist, Saab Jahal, thank you very much for joining me in the show again.
Thank you, James.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.